give it under. Tame ni kina mene.
Krishna,
Shila Prabhupada ki jai, Iskan Founder Acharya Shila Prabhupada ki jai, and I'm the Gaudi voice now, Vrindi ki jai, Nam Acharya Shikuyas Thakur ki jai, Vrense Kaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nichananda, Sirwede Gadad Ha Shiva Siddhi Gaur Bhakta Vrindi ki jai, Shri Shri Radhakrishna Gopika. Shayam Kunda, Radha Kunda. Giri Govardhan Kijai, Vrindavanam Kijai. Vachiradam Kijai, Sami Kijai, Manamai Kijai. Shimani Galasi Devi Kijai, Samaveda Bhakta Vrindi Kijai. Gaur Premananda, Helikadu. All glories to the assembled devotees. Glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga. Maam Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivinoda Swaminathana. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Charmi Devashosha. Shunyavadi Paschacha Dejitari Zolga Timurandasha. Yananjana Shlakaya Chakshura Vidina. So I'd like to read a quote from Srila Prabhupada before we start about compassion. This is from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Third canto, 21st chapter, text 31. Showing compassion to all living entities, you will attain self-realization. Giving assurance of safety to all, you will perceive your own self as well as all the universes in me, in myself, in you. Of course, that's Lord Yavila gives me. And Prabhupada's purport states, the first principle to be understood is that this world is a product of the Supreme Will. This means that everything should be considered a product of the Lord's energy, and therefore everything should be employed in the service of the Lord. One's energy should be utilized for one's interest. This is the perfection of the energy. This energy can be utilized for real self-interest if one is compassionate. He is not satisfied that only he himself is a devotee, but he tries to distribute the knowledge of devotional service to everyone. It is also said that a person who goes to the temple of the Lord and worships with great devotion, but who does not show sympathy to people in general or show respect to other devotees, is considered a third-class devotee. The second-class devotee is he who is merciful and compassionate to the fallen soul. The second-class devotee is always cognizant of his position as an eternal servant of the Lord. He therefore makes friendship with the devotee of the Lord, acts compassionately toward the general public in teaching them devotional service, and refuses to cooperate or associate with non-devotees. As long as one is... I mean, I can give a whole class about this. If one is not... maybe tomorrow I should... One who is not, as long as one is not compassionate to people in general in his devotional service to the Lord, he is a third class devotee. First class devotee gives assurance to every living being that there is no fear of the material existence. Let us live in Krishna consciousness and conquer the nascence of material existence. So So I have a question for all of you before you start with your seminars. That if Krishna actually loves us, why does he make this material world so miserable? Why doesn't he just make it pleasant? Why is there old age? Why is there death? Why is there disease? Why is there the threefold miseries? Krishna just make a nice place for the rebellious people? You know, we're rebellious. You know, let us be, you know. That Beatles song, you know. Let it be, let us be, you know. We're rebellious, you know. So, cool it, Krishna.
Sorry. He wants us to come back.
Yeah, but that's at the point of a gun. Get on flight without being frustrated. Yeah, I mean, free will means, okay, you don't want to serve me? Here, you've got this nice place to not serve me. Any other? You're not going to be able to defeat me. Anyways, huh? So, what, yeah. It's like I was just taking a Japa walk before class, and there seems to be a lot of pollen in the air. Mm. You know, pollen from plants. Yeah. And I feel my eyes are closing and itching and everything. So, Krishna, I'm your devotee. You know, I'm supposed to give a class. You know, my eyes are closed. It's going to be really hard. And I'm choking to death. Yeah. So I just... Who else? Yeah.
Well, I was thinking of before you said the pollen example.
Yeah.
But I was thinking we enjoy rust as well.
Yeah.
So the misery, that kind of stuff, is a perverted reflection of that. So we
That's
can
true.
Enjoy.
Yeah, but why does Krishna make the perverted reflection so miserable?
Because we want it to be miserable.
I don't want it to be miserable.
Easy come, easy go. Hard come.
Maybe he wants it to be miserable.
He wants it to be miserable?
No, to create like this.
Alright, I'll give the answer. Is everybody familiar, anyone familiar with Prabhupada's example of a fish outside of the water?
Yes.
Because the actual misery that we're experiencing in this world is being outside of our constitutional relationship, not having that need being met. And so, because that, if that need is being met, the material miseries are inconsequential. In other words, they don't bother us anymore. If that need is being met, like you see with Prabhupada. And so, this is, the material miseries are Krishna's reminder that this is not a natural place for us. Like we find in the spiritual world, the nature of the spiritual world is Satchitananda, eternity, bliss, and knowledge. And so Krishna arranges the opposite, so to remind us of our real nature. Like, we don't want to get old, we don't want to get sick. And actually, as stated in the Mahabharata, the most wonderful thing, does anyone know what the most wonderful thing in this world is according to the Mahabharata?
Everyone thinks they won't die. Millions and millions living entities die around us every day, but we think that we never die.
We never die, yeah. Ahani, ahani, bhutani, gachati, himalayam. So Krishna reminds us of that. This is not, if he keeps, the material miseries are just reminders that this is not our real place. And then Krishna, that's his kindness, that's his mercy, to remind us of that. And, okay, you may say, so why doesn't Krishna make it more pleasant? The only way that this material world could be more pleasant is if Krishna were to change our nature. And then we wouldn't be us. Right? Like, the only way to make a fish happy outside of the water is to give it some lungs. Transplant some lungs. There actually are fish called lungfish. That's another issue. We can actually breathe outside of the water. But apart from that, our nature is eternal. And so Krishna respects our independence and respects our nature and is not going to change our nature, because that's the only way a non-eternal world, which is the absence of Krishna, Krishna Surya Samaya Hayandakar, the only way a world which is absent, which has Krishna absent, all Krishna's everywhere, but Krishna's absent in everyone's consciousness, the only way this world could be pleasant is if we were unconscious. If we were not conscious entities. Because matter can never be conscious. Another point is, here's another explanation, that we're not actually here in this world. That's another explanation. It's like being in a virtual world. And because of our attachment to everything that's happening in this virtual world, like the soul is non-material. Just like we are not part of the computer game or virtual world. But because we identify with it so much, and this, of course, is based on Buddhism, that material world is suffering, suffering is caused by attachment, right?
Yeah.
Give up the attachment, give up the suffering, and follow the eightfold path. So we agree with most of that stuff. Actually just an illusion. Like when I am here sitting and looking at you, I am not looking at you. Because I'm driving this body, Yantra Bhutani Maya, as Krishna says in the Gita, Ramayan Sarva Bhutani Yantra Maya, Maya, Ishwara Sarva Bhutanam Vadecha Jina Bhutani, Ramayan, another material misery there, Ramayan Sarva Bhutani Yantra Maya. That's all right, he can do that, let him go. So we are seated, we are not actually in this materiality, we're experiencing indirectly. If you analyze our experiences in this world, let's say I love this body. Helps you not be in denial of responsibility. It helps you take responsibility for your feelings and needs in this process. See, that's the reason for the process. We want to take responsibility for our own feelings, our own needs. What's that?
We're baking bread.
Oh, you're baking bread. That's
yeah.
Nice. Which I can't eat. Very limited. Because I can smell it.
Oh.
And I can smell it. And I can't eat it. So, no compassion. So this process, or this way of looking at things, I don't want to say process, mechanistic, but a way of looking at things helps us take responsibility and understand what our needs are and take responsibility for fulfilling the needs, or at least being aware of the needs and developing what we call strategy. Remember, we went over these elements separately, but one element we didn't go over so far is something called observation. You know, just looking at something in a very scientific fashion. Like when I was talking about statistics, people, it's not scientific. Remember I talked about that? There's lies, damn lies, and statistics. Like I just got a letter from some I think I mentioned before. It said 90% of the people who got the vaccine in Russia got COVID. Now, that's an interpretation of, maybe it's not even an interpretation, maybe it's just fake news. But in any case, we observe things, but we don't actually observe things. We pass judgment on different things. And so what an observation is like what a detective, how a detective would describe something. You know, just like, it's very scientific. Like, at 22:01 on January 31st, this person opened the door on 201 East Street and walked out. There's something very, very specific like that. Normally, we're not accustomed to describing things in such a scientific, descriptive way. For example, if I ask one of you, is it hot today? What would you say?
No.
No?
No, in comparison to last.
What?
No, because yesterday and the day before was hotter.
Describe the heat here. How would you say?
It's windy and warm.
Windy and warm. Right now.
Yeah,
is anyone cool here?
Yes.
Is it warm? Is it warm? Are you warm?
No.
So is that an objective description? Because for some people are going to be feeling it's very cold in your dress. And for me, I'm feeling warm. That's true. I am feeling warm. But is it warm? Is that an objective description? What would be an objective description? What?
26 degrees.
Yeah, 26 degrees. 26.356214 7A. That's not quite precise, but anyway, you get the point. So to describe something means just the facts, just what happened. Like, if I say, all right, that. Adi Purush yesterday yelled at me. Is that a description? Is that an objective description?
Mm.
No, because it's my perception.
So senses are in the game.
Yeah. So we're perceiving something in a certain way. So, it's important to describe things precisely. You were mean to me yesterday. No. Let me read some. Let me get out the book and my glasses. So you can all give your opinion about whether things are objective descriptions or not. Hold on a second. Okay. Here's a say yes or no, as far as it's concerned. John was angry with me yesterday for no reason. That's not observation. Yesterday evening, Devi Dasi bit her fingernails during class.
Yes.
Okay, good. You're all good students. Good students. My father is a good man.
No.
Krishnadas works too much.
No.
That's good. So and so is aggressive. Devi Dasi was first in line for prasadam every day this week. Yeah. So, so-and-so doesn't brush his teeth often.
No.
You know, often is not an objective statement. So-and-so told me that I don't look good in yellow. Yeah. The temple president complains when I talk to him. I'm not saying whether it's true or false. But complains, wait, is that?
No.
No, because you're saying complains. So it's important. Okay. Okay, so here's an exercise for everywhere. Maybe we go around the room. Around the outside. We're asking you to all think of a person who stimulates some emotion in you. And let's say an emotion that's an unpleasant emotion, like anger, grief, or fear. Think of what he does and try to think of it as an observation. Okay, who wants to volunteer? Volunteers? Yeah.
So I have to be objectively.
Yeah.
Okay. So this person.
Observation means specific time, place, circumstance.
Okay, I send it to the
specific person.
Specific person?
Well, you don't have to mention the name.
Yeah. The specific situation.
Yeah.
Okay, so last week, so-and-so told me an information at a particular time. That time was too late to react.
Yeah, so-and-so at a specific time said what?
Gave me some information that needed to be reacted on, but it was...
What information?
Something about that we need to finish something for the project.
He said you need to finish this for the project.
Today at 1 o'clock, but it was 12 and it was too late.
So he told you at 12:30 he told you have to finish this project by 1 o'clock.
Yeah, something for the project, but it was not enough time.
Forget about there's not enough time.
Oh, okay.
But so he told you you got to finish the work for the project at 12:30. And it was 12:30 and you have to finish at 1 o'clock. Okay, that's an observation. And how did you feel about that?
I was frustrated.
Frustrated.
Yeah. I had a hard feeling in the chest.
You felt pain in your chest?
Not physical pain, but...
Yeah, and so...
I was mostly frustrated because now I have to explain why I cannot finish
my life. What was the need that was not being met?
That I had more time to...
Need. You had a need for...
Being an efficient worker.
Well, I don't find this... I wanted to finish this problem.
Need for efficiency?
Yeah, but also... If I receive this information sooner, then I would be able to do something about it. So
I need to perform nicely to be responsible.
Yeah.
whatever. So, so we're trying to connect everything. So I'm getting a little ahead of myself. So we have the observations, which are just the facts. Anyone else want to share just observations? Yeah.
Priya stole my clothes.
Stole
my leggings from my closet.
Yeah.
3 different times. But I could say specifically on like a Thursday or whatever, I don't know.
Stole?
Without asking me, took and wore my clothes.
Alright. So Priya took your clothes from your closet.
Without asking.
At a specific time.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Stole is actually sort of judgment. Mm. Because you don't know if she stole them or she felt them, they were hers. I mean, I'm not.
Or was going to give them back.
Yeah. Yeah, she was going to give them back. Who else wants to share? No one else? Yeah.
My wife showed me khichdi every morning.
Your wife gives you khichdi every morning? Poor guy. So maybe we should let your wife judge that one. All right. So what's the issue with that one as far as an observation? Well, well, now we have a genuine conflict. So. Oh my God!
Can we deal with it like we dealt with why Krishna makes the world miserable? It's a kindness, it's a reminder.
Try to detach you from this world. So, what is not specific about that particular observation? Every morning? What do you think about every morning? Every morning. There's never been a time in material creation since you've been married that you haven't had khichdi. What about Ekadashi? Oh. So your wife doesn't make anything on Ekadashi for you. So it should be a very specific thing, like yesterday your wife made you in the morning made you khichdi. Rather, when you phrase it like every day, then you end up with a non-specific statement. An observation is a very specific statement, because most of the time, I don't want to use an absolute term, most of the time when we use the word every day or all the time, it doesn't really apply. The reason I'm saying most of the time, because if I said all the time, I would be guilty of the same thing. Isn't that, if I said, because if I were to, there are statements that are true all the time. When I woke up this morning, Krishna was in my heart. Every morning I wake up, Krishna is in my heart. Krishna is always in my heart. So there are absolute statements that are applicable as observations. So the statement should be, yesterday your wife, or 2 days ago, or last week, on such and such a day, your wife made you khichdi. And so, let's continue with this. With like, how do you feel about it since you don't want khichdi?
That makes me angry.
Well, it doesn't. The observation, let's go a little further. It may stimulate certain needs you have. But remember, when we blame something that happens, or something that someone does, or something that someone is, for our own feelings, what are we doing? Does anyone know? Denial of responsibility. So it's very important, we're trying to connect these four D's with the process. It's very important to understand that if we have some feelings, like anger, yes, you could, I'm not saying you weren't angry when you got that kitchen every day. But to take responsibility for it. So, all right, so let's go through the process. So, last week, or every day last week, your wife fed you khichdi for breakfast. Is that true? Oh. She never did. So, all right, last week, every day, your wife never cooked for you. Didn't cook for you. That even makes you angrier. So let's take the hypothetical situation. That last week your wife made you khichdi every day of the week for breakfast. So that stimulates a particular emotion. And you mentioned you're angry. Now, what need did you have that is actually the unfulfilled need that you have that you would connect with the anger?
Anything else than khichdi?
That's one of the needs on the chart. Anything else but khichdi? That's interesting. How about a need for variety? Or something that's tasty?
Or maybe to be understood, like if someone has expressed that they specifically like or dislike something, then it could be...
Yeah. So you have a need for something that's tasty. So what strategies would you take to have something that's tasty? Anyway, so when you think about that need for something tasty, are you still angry? When you take responsibility for it?
No.
No. And so then, you're responsible. So what are you going to do as a strategy?
Buy something, cooking, which one cannot make khichdi out of.
Yeah, I mean, there's all sorts of strategies. He can cook for himself, he can get another wife. I mean, there's so much.
That's a suggestion I haven't thought about. Big hopes.
I'm not seriously suggesting that, obviously. Why did you leave your husband? And why did you leave your wife? Because she just made khichdi every day for me. So, you know, there's the process right there. You're feeling, you have some feelings. Now, anger is a feeling. And we have to also talk about feelings. Feelings are from the heart. We mentioned this before. Feelings are not a judgment. You know, how did you feel? I felt, you know, a judgment would be, I felt cheated. Betrayed by my wife because she, you know, betrayed because she made khichdi. But abused. Here's a good one. that would be from the mind. My wife was abusing me by making me khichdi every day. What did Prabhupada say? Oh yeah, Prabhupada said if you have an unwanted guest, don't feed him.
What?
Yeah, the Prophet said, if you have a guest that you don't want, don't feed them, they'll go away. So I'm also adding that if you have someone you don't want, to feed them what they don't want. And then they go away. The Prophet told a funny story about him, which I don't remember right now. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakura said, if you want to make devotees, you have to give them balam rice with ghee on it. Ghee on it. It means like basmati rice with ghee. And he tells the whole story about a man who couldn't keep his servants. The servants kept going away after 2 weeks because he was abusing them. And then his friend said, just feed them, feed the servants ghee on their rice, basmati rice, I guess. That's what bulb rice would mean. And do that for about 2 weeks or 3 weeks, and they'll never go away. So he fed them that, and the servants never left. Or if they left, they came right back, because they remembered the taste. So Prabhupada's strategy was through the tongue, you know, prasadam distribution. So, are we going to save this marriage? Or? So anyway, so anybody else want to volunteer? It's interesting, yeah.
I would like, if possible, to escalate this situation a bit. Like, if I'm not, I understand I can cook for myself or find some other ways.
Yeah.
But I'm bugged much more by the fact that I said that I would like, and it's being ignored. So is that a demand? Or
yes.
We could write it into needs for...
You have a need for someone to be obedient to you?
No, but I have a need for someone to care for me, which would
okay.
be interesting. Then, like, okay, if I know that something hurts you, then...
It's a, you have a need for someone to... Let's unpack that. You have a need for someone to care for you. Okay. So, where's your husband? No, it's not going to work. Unless he's there. Anyway, so you have a need... You have a need for someone to care for you. Okay. So, let's say you present this to your husband. Even though he's not here to defend himself. You say, my dear husband, I have a need for someone to kiss.
He's
there?
Oh, he's there!
Okay, come here. Remember these four D's of discommunication. Okay.
Maharaj,
you
already said
I'm your
I will
wife.
Pay. You already said that I will pay for this.
we can send you the recording later on. I'm your wife. You know, we're liberal in Krishna consciousness. Next thing we're going to have a multicolored flag.
Oh my God.
So I'm your wife. And you're not cooking for me or doing... Can't really not showing that you care for me, so I... My dear husband, I have a need for you to care for me. How do you feel?
I feel it's a little bit of a...
I need you to care for me. You never care for me. I feel neglected.
Oh my God.
So, he'll respond. I'll tell you. I'll take his part now. Don't you see that I'm working a job and bringing money? I know how he's going to respond. Am I right?
I mean, he didn't give me a reason to say what you said before, but if I give something softer than that, yeah, that's it.
That's how. Yeah, I'm working hard every day. I'm supporting you, supporting the children, and, you know, paying all the bills. You know, isn't that care? So, I'm taking both parts right now. So, all right, you're the husband. Yeah. So how do you feel that I really have a need for care?
It's normal, it's a need. So,
I have a need for you to care for me.
Yes, and I do whatever I can.
It's not enough. You should show it. So, when you focus the need on a person, what do they hear it as?
Demand.
A demand. And it's pressure. Because this care has to be given voluntarily from your heart. You know, if you say to someone, I have a need for you to love me, so it's a need, yeah, you do have a need for care. But the whole point is to not demand it of someone. Now there's certain times when a need can be focused on a particular individual, when I have a need for my child's safety, let's say. That's really an exceptional case. But when you focus a need or the fulfillment of a need on a particular individual, the person will often hear it as a demand. And then the person will say, you are needy. And of course that's a diagnosis. And then you've got all these blocks of communication. You're needy. I need you to do this. And care is not a specific request. Because we'll get to that later on, requests really have to be specific. And it's bewildering. If someone says to me, I need you to care, I say, what does it mean?
But if we say, okay, I want pancakes on Mondays and porridge on Tuesdays, and kitri once a week, and then other 4 days of the week.
Cook it yourself. What am I, your order supplier?
But if it is, let's say, if there is a, so to say, contract at home, that the wife is cooking, and the husband is, I don't know, earning money.
Yeah.
Then it matters what she cooks. They have sort of a contract.
Oh, the man is asking for that.
Yeah.
Reversing it right now. So, the question is, if you can do this joyfully, you know, requests are, you know, that's a further part of the process after observations and feelings and needs, and then requests. The interesting thing about requests is that after you express your needs, they have to be made instantaneously. If you are willing, a request, we talked about this before, a request is if you are willing to do it joyfully. Because the opposite of a request is a demand. And it's a question of your intention when you're asking for something. And requests have to be very, very specific. Would you be willing to go to the store and buy the boga for this evening's meal? You know, very, very specific. So the main point I'm making with your statement, I have a need for care, is it's not going to be heard very nicely by your husband. Because he's going to hear that as a demand. What do you think?
Yeah. True.
But if you follow that by a request and you're specific, and it's something that he's willing to do. Like if you say, I have a need for care, will you buy me a diamond ring?
Sure.
If it's only this.
And sometimes the wife says, you never buy me any flowers. You ever say that?
He does.
So he does care.
Well, absolutely. It wasn't a real case.
Oh, good. I'm happy to hear that. The marriage will stay together. So who else wants to share with us? Yes.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Do we hear as a demand only when our needs are not fulfilled, or is...
We hear as a demand when someone focuses as the fulfillment of a need on us, and the person is not willing to look for other alternatives. And also we hear it as a demand when the person doesn't make a specific request, because if you just express a demand, need, then it appears as if the person is demanding. Not always. Not always. Like if I say I have a need for fun, it's not necessarily that I'm demanding that you fulfill that need. But certain things in a relationship, I have a need for compassion, would indicate that you're telling the person that you have no compassion. I have a need for understanding. Sometimes it depends on the circumstance. It depends on the relationship. But usually when you're expressing a need to someone, it's good to come with a specific request really quickly. Otherwise it's not specific, and it appears like you're demanding something. And the request should be with the mood, if you are willing joyfully to do this. So the whole point is whatever we do, we should be doing joyfully and willingly. And there's ways to reframe certain things that we do. Let's say I have to work. And then, what is that when you say you have to work? That's a denial of responsibility. I have to work. So if you reframe it in your mind that I'm choosing to work, and then you put, this is an internal thing, I'm choosing to work because I have a need to take care of my family. And then you become more joyful. But if you're thinking, I have to go to work every day, I usually give the example of a lady who works in a bank, and she's trapped in this little cupboard, you know, little section, you know, the teller. You know what a teller is in the bank? The person who counts the money, gives it money. And she counts your money, it's not her money. If it was her money, she'd be in ecstasy. But she's giving out other people's money, and then the camera's watching her the whole time to make sure she doesn't pocket any of it. I'll tell you a funny story here. One time I was crossing the border, I think from Serbia to Croatia, and we didn't have the proper insurance papers. So I told the devotee, just put a 50 euro bill inside your passport.
Oh my God.
Really?
That's how life functions.
Seriously.
And so the guy took the passport, dropped the passport to the floor. Because it was out of sight of the camera. I said, I dropped your passport, sorry. So anyway, getting back.
It's like India.
Isn't how things function?
Yeah, you gave them too much, but them.
So anyway, getting back to the lady in the teller who can't pocket the money, or else you put in jail. She's working all day long in this little tiny booth. And she thinks, if she thinks I'm trapped here in this little tiny booth all day long, it's misery. But what she has at the same time is a picture of her children, not her husband. Because the only function of a husband is to give children. You'll discover that. So she's looking at me. It's just a joke. Who's that guy? So she used to love me. Anyway, so she's looking at the picture of her children, and she's not thinking, I'm trapped in this booth. She's thinking, I'm doing this for my children out of love. So she's actually being, you know, very empathic, connecting with her needs. You know, the love and connection with the children. So if we do that in our daily activities, especially our Krishna conscious activities, then what may appear to be ritualistic or forced can become very pleasant. Like, I am choosing to wake up early because I want to connect to Krishna. And I've spoken about this before. Or I want to please my spiritual master, all these other things like that. Then it becomes very, very pleasant. All right, so who else wants to share? Like, yeah?
I have one question.
Yeah, sure.
Your remark was that we need to do action joyfully at the end of the day.
We shouldn't do anything that's not joyful.
Yes, but let's go back to real life.
Real life.
That's good.
I'm speaking
from my point of view. I don't do all of my action joyfully. That's
right.
Theoretically, maybe sometimes, you know, I do it joyfully, but not all the time. Is that because my needs are not fulfilled? I'm not.
That may be because you're not connecting your actions with your needs. In other words, again, we get to that why question. You know, why am I doing what I'm doing? And if it doesn't connect to your needs, then maybe you do need to change. You know, let's say you're working the job in a factory, in a hellish factory, with a lot of noise and everyone around you is smoking cigars or and it's miserable. So how can you make that pleasant?
I mean, if I do it for some higher goal.
The higher goal is the why, you know. When you think, you put in your heart the actual reason you're doing it. And I remember, the psychologist's name, something you may remember, he wrote about his experiences in a concentration camp. Real Frankel. He wrote about his experience, not that he was in ecstasy in a concentration camp, but he always thought of the higher purpose, and that kept him alive. I'm not saying that he was happy, ecstatic, or anything like that. So, even if we're doing something that externally is very difficult, or could be considered unpleasant, if we rephrase it in terms of our needs, like that, I mean, I sometimes give the example of my diet. Like, I really like to eat pizza and sweet rice, love jamons, and what else? Ice cream. Oh, yeah, I used to eat 2 liters of ice cream at one time while I was driving a car.
That's great.
Keep myself awake. So, I don't need any of those things today because I'm connecting with my need. And this is not a criticism at anyone else's diet. Please, excuse me. Because I'm connecting with my need for health and longevity and service to Prabhupada. And so when I connected it, when I drew that connection, then giving up something that I couldn't give up before. You know, I had the philosophy, like many people have, that if I have to give up this, it's better to die. I mean, just to give an example, which many people have heard before, whenever I would go somewhere, I would travel with cheese, in case the place I was going to didn't have cheese. I'd go to India with barrels, bottles. Do you remember this pretty much? Grandma knows me. With bottles of cheese, in case in India there wasn't any Swiss cheese. And so one day I just thought, even though I was addicted to it. I'm really addicted, you know, taking shots in my arm, hypodermic needle. It was that bad. Not quite that bad. But it was that bad. And so when I connected to my needs, then I found I was able to do something that I considered before would be painful. I'm not saying you need to do the same thing. But if we connect to our needs, we can execute what would be considered to be austerities joyfully. Like Krishna consciousness joyfully performed. You know, waking up early in the morning, chanting rounds every day, associating with devotees. Anyway, then it's just a question of going in your heart and connecting to your needs. And if your activities don't connect to your needs, perhaps you need to change them. Perhaps you need to change them. You need to, but we are choosing to do our activities. We have to take personal responsibility for that. Yeah.
I think that what you said requires a lot of mindfulness, that you know all the time what you're doing.
Yeah.
Because while listening to you just now, I realize that I keep forgetting why I'm chanting, why I'm offering, mm-hmm. why I'm... And that's when I can be miserable. But if I remember that it's my choice and I realize that actually I'm exactly in the place where I want to be. But
it's mindfulness.
That's why sadhana, right? To remind yourself why you're doing it.
Yeah, to always be aware why I'm doing what I'm doing. Whether I'm sitting here speaking to you about Krishna consciousness or about the communication, whether I'm chanting my rounds, whatever I'm doing. Why? What is the need I'm trying to fulfill by doing that activity? Otherwise, in Krishna consciousness, you were doing something called Niyamagraha. You know that verse?
No. I heard it, I don't know it.
Okay. Achahara prayasas chalpa jalpa Niyamagraha janasangas chalayam cha sadviru bhaktir vinashati. And that's from the Nectar of Instruction, which states, there are certain things that destroy your devotional service. And, of course, the first one is eating too much. But that doesn't apply to all of you. Prabhupada said when you first join the Krishna consciousness movement, you should eat so much that it goes up to your neck. So everyone follows that instruction. So achahara, or collecting too much. Both are the same thing. Achahara, prayasas. Job means over endeavor for just over endeavor. What does over endeavor mean? That means one works so hard that one does more, or tries to do more than they're capable of doing, or biting off more than they can chew. One, even Krishna consciousness, it applies. For example, one time I thought I would do a really big project and for Krishna, and I bought a hotel. Yeah. On the beach. Yeah, it's true. This is not a joke. It was a beautiful hotel on the beach. And it was great. Private beach, everything like that. 100 rooms.
100
rooms. Swimming pool. For Krishna. It was for Krishna. I mean, I like to swim too. But anyway, it was a great idea. Everyone loved it, actually. But it required extensive management, extensive financial input. And after a while, I developed an ulcer. Ulcers are when the acid in your stomach gets so strong that you can't eat anything. The only thing you drink is milk. Milk is the only thing that passes by. So I had an ulcer. I was getting sick. And I was a young man, too, that time. So that was over and never. You know, fortunately I got out of it. Saved myself. So that's Ajaha Prayasa's job. And then Prajalpa means... Anyone know what Prajalpa is?
Yes.
Just idle talk, like that, just talking about mundane things. But the point I'm making is the word Niyamagraha. Niyamagraha, there's two ways of pronouncing that. Niyamagraha, Niyamagraha. Niyamagraha, listen to the difference. Niyamagraha is different than Niyamagraha. Can you hear the difference? Niyamagraha, alright, I'll stress the pronunciation. Niyamagraha! And the other one is Niyamagraha! These are Sanskrit, I should be aware.
Some Sanskrit pundits might find that pronunciation a little bit.
A little problematic,
yeah.
But I'm just trying to think of it. So, Niyamagraha means not following the rules and regulations. But Niyamagraha means to follow the rules and regulations, but to be inattentive or not to be thinking of the reason for following the rules and regulations. You know, why am I chanting? I have to chant my rounds. Like Prabhupada said, you know, this is an example I gave you. Where's my beats? Oh, there they are. Like Prabhupada gave the example one time, he was chanting his rounds, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. I moved his counter beats down. He said, finish my rounds, now I can do any damn thing. Thank God I finished my rounds. You ever had that experience? So, you know, it's just like something I got to get out of the way until I, before I can have my real life. Right?
Sometimes,
yes. Japa purgatory! You know, purgatory, a punishment. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Krishna. Oh, they're almost done. You've had that experience?
Yeah.
You just look at
it. Like,
oh no! You had that experience. Why isn't it going quicker? I think you will have that experience. These beats seem longer than they were before. Someone added a few beats. My job is so good. So it's just like chanting because you have to chant. You know, there's a denial of responsibility, not being connected to your needs. Because actually, empathic communication means to be basically connected to your needs all the time. And the needs of others, you know, you're connected to your needs. So everything is like connected to my needs. So why am I chanting? So before you chant, it's a good idea to have a sankalpa. Now, in Sanskrit, sankalpa, what do you use the definition?
Spiritual desire.
Desire, intention, right?
Hopefully spiritual.
Yeah, hopefully spiritual. Yeah. Now, the sankalpa should be, you know, let me get it done. It's the why again. And many times when I'm describing empathic communication, I stress the word why. You know, why? Why am I doing what am I doing? What I'm doing. So, then you have the sankalpa. Before you chant, think, what's the reason I'm chanting? Well, I have to. If I don't chant, my spiritual master will be angry with me. I made a vow. There's many different reasons which are not really connected to your needs. I made a vow. Set a good example. Of course, that's probably a good example. Gotta say, if I don't chant my rounds, I'll be miserable. No, so what I usually do is think of why I'm chanting my rounds. I'm chanting my rounds at different reasons. Every day your why can change. One day I'm chanting my rounds because I'm praying for some rascal disciple. That's normal.
praying for Hare Krishna. Let him learn to have emotions.
Thank you for your
pleasure. It's working! It's working!
Hare Krishna, my dear Lord Krishna, say Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna.
I can pick on him because he's the interesting thing is I only pick on the people I'm really close to. I don't usually pick on people who might freak out. So it's actually a sign of a closer relationship. You take it like that, it's a sign of affection. So when I'm chanting, and then the chanting becomes really intense. Joking aside, when you have really good sankalpa, like you're chanting, I mean, a pure devotee would be chanting like Vasudev Dutt. I'm chanting for all the conditioned souls in this world. Please, Krishna, save them. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. I mean, that's not, I don't have that sankalpa. I have to be honest about that. I'm not Vasudev Dutt. But I may be chanting for a particular individual, or I may be chanting, please let me please Prabhupada, or I may be chanting, please empower me to present Krishna consciousness to others. I mean, you know, just like getting a jolt of spiritual energy. Or please help me deal with this conflict situation. Something that happens. You know, there's something extremely stimulated pain in me. Someone said something and I just want to try to understand it, try to normalize my consciousness, Hare Krishna. So there's an intention, and then by that intention one becomes attentive. So that's really important. So that's called Niyam Agraha, which is one of the things that helps us deviate from Krishna consciousness is inattention. It helps us, gets us away from Krishna consciousness. So it's really, if I haven't communicated or can't communicate anything else by the seminar, that to me is the most important thing. That whatever you do, be in touch with why you're doing what you're doing. And then really life becomes much more pleasant. If you're wise, you know, it has to be, why means connecting to a need. Not simply that I'm doing this because I want you to be miserable. That's not a need. So, who else has a question?
Maharaj,
yeah.
If I can have another question.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, the issue is that we are not connected to ourselves.
Yeah, we're disconnected. Right?
Yeah, and this is a constant struggle, more or less. I guess all of our needs will not be fulfilled until we are 100% Krishna conscious. So my question is, this technique of non-violent communication,
yeah,
it's just a technique, but if our consciousness is not there...
That's right.
Okay, sometimes we can turn on the intelligence to maybe use it, but most of the times now we see it's okay, yeah, I could maybe put it in my life, but it's not, you know, always there. So it's a struggle, I guess.
Yeah, it's a practice. I wouldn't say it's a technique. I mean, even though sometimes we present EC or non-violent communication as a technique with observations, feelings, needs, requests, etc., or strategies, as the case may be. Really, we have to take it in our hearts as just being connected and acting in accordance with our needs and being aware of our needs. And our needs, I don't know if we ever really talked that much about needs, but let's go to that for a second. So needs, there's a pyramid of needs which was first thought of, at least as far as I know. Well, Bhaktivinoda came up with it. But there's the psychologist Maslow. And the pyramid of the needs starts at the bottom with basic survival needs, like air, food, light, things like that. Things, some things we couldn't live without even for 4 minutes, like air. Other things, a little longer, like water, probably do without water for what, 24 hours or something like that, or 48 hours before you get kidney damage. And so you have this hierarchy of needs. And as you progress up the hierarchy, and there's a, I wish we could draw the chart here, but I guess no one has a pen or something like that.
There's pens up there.
Do we have a pen here?
Yeah, yeah.
Things like air, food, water, light. Basic, you know, basic physical needs. And the interesting thing, you see that you can't progress to higher needs before your lower needs are fulfilled. Can anyone progress to self-realization without air? Because at the top you can put self-realization, you have a Christian. Just Casey. And actually, Maslow calls it self-actualization. But I'm more interested in Casey than self-actualization. So in between, you have certain things that even as devotees were taught that are not important. Like, and I'm not going to put them in order right now, but you have a need for autonomy. Autonomy? Does everyone know what autonomy is?
Yeah, I'm telling you what I know.
A-U-T-O-N-O-M-Y. Autonomy means the desire to make your own choices in life. Not to be dictated and controlled by someone else. You know, autonomy. That's why when I was describing the other day about the terrible twos, when a child becomes 2 years old and he starts to differentiate himself from the parents, his identity is differentiated from the parents, and he's establishing his autonomy, which is a wonderful thing. Because you don't want a child not to distinguish his autonomy and just be part of your body when he's 25 years old. That's really... I mean, if a child has some genetic disease, sometimes that happens. That the child can't function as an individual for the rest of his life. So autonomy is very important. Recreation, you can put recreation anywhere you want.
Yeah.
Or, as we sometimes say, recreation. Another one I like is fun. Oh yeah, shelter. Why don't you put shelter here? I forgot about shelter. I thought shelter was a band. Yeah. Shelter, fun, community. Well, that's not here. That'd be like here. And so anyway, so I don't remember them all right now.
Loving relationships.
What? Yeah, relationships. That's also community. Relationships.
Or like belonging and acceptance.
Yeah, belonging and acceptance. It's all community based.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, belonging, it's a, we write it on the side here. Of course, for me, on my triangle, humor would be here at basic. That'd be along with air, food, light, and everything like that. Couldn't live without laughter. No, laughter is actually a need. But you don't have to put it here. Because people can live for longer than 5 minutes without laughter. So I would put it here as part of, you know, as part of community, laughter, fun. What would happen if you were in a Hare Krishna temple and you would tell them, I have a need for recreation?
Okay, kicked out.
You're in line.
Go wash the dishes in the...
Yeah, that's recreation.
Go on Sankirtan.
Or you can, or dance with the deities, that's your recreation. And, or if you told someone, I have a need for loving relationships, what would they tell you? Here in Maya, go get married. Or I have a need for fun. That's a big one.
We have to suffer.
No, it's a, yeah, because we're supposed to suffer in this world. The nature of this world is suffering, so this is not a human need. You can only have fun in the spiritual world. So there's a problem there. The Bhaktivinoda Thakur, as we mentioned yesterday, in Chaitanya Shikshamrita, mentions many of these things here. And in order to come up to here, or be stable in this, these have to be fulfilled. So this is the explanation of needs. All right, so who else wants to take us through the observations, feelings, needs?
Oh, there's...
Okay.
My boss said, I don't have time, please come to my office.
Mm-hmm. When did he say that?
Yes, can I?
Yeah, continue.
Instead of 5 minutes, he said, I was there 1 hour.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's a good observation. And if you give a specific time when he said that. So, but how do you feel?
I knew it's not true that he doesn't have time and I will have to spend more than he said in his office.
But what is your feeling?
I had a feeling that he doesn't care that I have work to do. I work in a kindergarten.
See how hard it is, that feeling. So,
yes.
The feeling is from the heart. Right now you're going
in the head.
In the head. So what was your feeling?
Disappointed.
Disappointed in him?
Yes.
Isn't that in the head too?
Discouraged.
Discouraged, okay.
Is this a feeling?
That can be a feeling, I'm discouraged.
Oh, okay. I don't have so many English words. This was
That's fine. We generally, even those of us who speak English or speak any language, we have a very small vocabulary of feelings. Very, very small vocabulary of feelings. I should get my book out. I have a big list of feelings, and I don't have it in this particular thing. Anyway, so there's like thousands of feelings. They're like thousands of colors. Like generally, we think of colors, we'll only mention how many colors, like 5, 6, 7 colors. Red, blue, black, green,
purple.
Ooh, purple.
Brown.
Yuck. Is that your favorite color? What's your favorite color?
Magenta.
Magenta! Okay, Hare Krishna. One of the things that I studied was called the Lusher color test. You ever heard of that before? He's a German scientist who would analyze people's psychology according to their favorite colors. You know about that program, right?
Yes, I know. You test looking.
I test looking. Oh my God. I'm not going to ask you what your favorite color is. So magenta. So magenta. I'm really be tolerant of the fruit. So anyway, getting back to the colors thing. Actually, maybe I should get a copy of my book so I can hold on a second.
Magenta is like, I believe it's like emotional. Wants a husband, is what he used to say to me.
All right. Let's get into me.
Wants a husband.
I just wanted to read some of the varied needs. So here's a list, a very partial list of feelings when our needs are fulfilled. Happy, captivated, blissful, thoughtful, overwhelmed, passive, wired.
Yeah.
Enthralled, peaceful, pensive, overawed, calm, pleased, intrigued, delighted, engaged, stunned, moved, joyful, interested, wonderful, active, dazed, encouraged, fascinated, satisfied, astonished, confident, ecstatic, occupied, content, absorbed, surprised, assured, thrilled, attracted, enamored. This gives you a list, partial list. And if our needs are not fulfilled, depressed, fearful, angry, miserable, afraid. I feel bad just reading this list. Agitated, unsettled, annoyed, anxious, sad, uneasy, tense, melancholy, apprehensive, stressed, dismayed, restless, frustrated, challenged, frightened, disturbed. So, it's good to develop a whole vocabulary of feelings. And the feelings come right from here. And, you know, a feeling may not be a regular word. I just feel yuck.
Blah.
Blah. Yuck. You know, whatever. So that's from the heart. So how did you feel, or how do you feel about the circumstance you mentioned?
Discouraged.
Encouraged, okay.
Discouraged.
Okay, discouraged, yeah. Sad. Depressed. Unhappy.
Unhappy.
Good. And what was the need?
My need?
Mm-hmm.
To be understood.
You had the need to be understood. Very good. Now, forgive me, I have this itching in my throat from the pollen, so that's why I'm going. It happens. So, how do you feel now that you understand your need? And you're taking responsibility for your feelings.
I would like to explain to him.
All right, you didn't come up with a strategy. That's good.
Although he's my boss.
He's your boss.
Yes.
Good. Okay, so who else would like to ask a question about what we're going on?
I have one question.
Yeah.
The feelings. I know there are some verses, I've read them a few times, but I don't know them well. I think it's on some later cantos of Bhagavatam that talk about the feelings.
Mm-hmm.
So it lists feelings and then it says these feelings are in the mode of passion or something like that. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Gunas, yeah.
Yeah, so there are like listed feelings.
Yeah.
So like anger is passion and so on.
Yeah. So the question is, I'm not saying that, I'm not defying or going against the Shastras, but let's say you have a particular feeling in the moment of passion, how do you deal with it? Or like anger is the mode of ignorance. So how do you deal with it? Anybody have any ideas? You know, I can answer, I'm just asking you all.
Try to engage it.
Well, you try to understand it. Like, I am angry. Let's say, okay, let's say you were supposed to cook for me. You are. But let's say today I come at 4 o'clock when I'm supposed to take prasadam. And you say, I forgot. And I get angry. Okay. I wouldn't get angry, because I'm transcendental. I'm a pure. So anyway, so let's say I get angry. And I get angry, and that's, you know, like I said, that in that particular case it would be the mode of ignorance. So how do I deal with it in a empathic way? Tell me.
Well, identify the need, I guess.
Yeah. I am angry.
Yeah.
What stimulated it? She didn't cook for me. I had this demand that she must cook for me. And I got angry. But actually, I have a need for prasadam.
Was that expectation, maybe?
Yeah, I have an expectation. That's the point. The word you just mentioned is very important. Expectations. Because in most cases, when we have expectations, they're demands. And people experience it like that. So the way I deal with it, so that I don't get angry, you know, I wouldn't get angry, is because I don't have any expectations of people. I've actually, in my mind, I don't have any expectations. Like if I arrive in the airport, which has happened many times, there's no one there to pick me up. One time I arrived in Fiji, and I call on the phone, you know, they're 2.5 hours away, and they said, oh, we thought you were supposed to arrive tomorrow. And I didn't get angry because I didn't have an expectation. Actually, I expected them not to pick me up. But in a relationship, it's very sweet if people don't have an expectation. If they, I mean, obviously you have some expectations, but it shouldn't go so deep that if someone does something for me, I'm much more grateful. Like if she's going to cook something today, you must have to. But listen, if she doesn't, if she says, you know, I can't cook for you, it's okay. I don't feel like cooking for you. Then it's all right. And then when she does cook, I'm just so grateful. So expectations, or having expectations, can be, in many cases, be perceived as demands, or experienced as demands. Get tissue. Achoo!
Bless you.
Thank you for your blessings. Usually everyone asks me for blessings. That's when I'm sneezing, so I get the blessings of the Vaishnavas. It's all a strategy.
There's also water. Do you want that?
No, the water won't do anything. It's just the pollen in the air. Yeah. No, didn't bless me so much. I had the expectation it was getting my blessing. Now I have to stop sneezing. So, thank you for bringing up that word. Expectations, because they are perceived in many cases as demands. Don't worry, sometimes it goes on 100 times like that. Before it stops. It's not serious.
So if you don't have expectation, actually you start to strengthen your autonomy.
That's right. You got it. Because if she says that I'm not going to cook for you anymore, because you're just a mean guru, that I said, fine, I'll cook for myself. Or I'll find someone else to cook for me. You know, so many times people have a position of guru become so dependent on others that they lose their ability to function by themselves. And therefore, they become dysfunctional. You know, sometimes devotees say to me, you know, I described it, especially in the Indian community, I said, you know, I just went to a program, I drove myself. But do you drive? You know, a guru who drives? Don't you have anyone to do that for you? People say, who's taking care of you? Who's carrying your luggage when you travel? I said, I travel by myself. I said, oh my God, no one's taking care of you. And I say, if I had to travel with someone, I'd be taking care of them. It's like that, you know. Many times I've traveled with groups and I end up being the babysitter for the whole group, waking them up in the morning. It's torture. We had a group of 30 devotees. We took on the South Indian tour, 30, 35 devotees. And I was the tour guide and arranging everything for them, waking them up in the morning, giving them their bottles, changing the diapers. You know, let me travel by myself. You know. Yeah, so, and then when someone does something for you, if you don't have expectations, it is very sweet. You know, I don't expect someone to do something. And I never asked Lita Sundari to cook for me. I didn't say, I'm going to make the arrangements, she's supposed to cook. But she does, and I'm really thankful at that point. So it's really sweetens the relationship when someone does something. And I'm willing to do it myself. I have no problem. So yes, if we don't have too many expectations in relationships, it actually makes the relationship sweeter. That's a very important point, yeah.
Hypothetically, is it possible that I don't have a need for autonomy, that I want to depend on somebody?
Well, it's possible that your need for autonomy is not so pronounced. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody's different. But you do, to a certain extent. I mean, let's say, would you be happy if someone was like dressing you every day? You know, if your wife just said, you know, put your clothes on you, put your socks on you.
Socks are okay.
You say, would you like to eat? You know, to put a spoon and put it in your mouth? Would that make you happy? So you do have to need for autonomy. Maybe not as much as me.
No, I was thinking hypothetically, if there are persons who maybe like have a need or like to depend on somebody.
That's a need for, you know, loving relationships and everything like that. But everybody has some need for autonomy. Yeah. some need. I mean, it's a basic human need. You know, even if you're depending on someone else, you want to really decide what you're going to eat that night. You know, like he was describing, that his wife cooks khichdi every morning for breakfast. So that interferes with his need for autonomy, right? You know, I'm going to decide what I'm going to eat, and his wife, it's not a real story, I understand that. And his wife would say, no, you're just going to eat khichdi every morning. You know, so that's the need for autonomy, making his own choices in life. Yeah, and basically, one in that situation is thinking, I don't want to get treated like a baby. I'm an adult. You know, I know what I want to eat. You know, and so people respond like that. So I think we have these needs. It's just some people it's more pronounced than others. With me, it's extremely pronounced with me. But I had, you know, you can analyze it psychologically. I'm not going to say why. Probably has to do with my mother. But I have a very strong need for autonomy. Not just following orders like that, but doing things from the heart. Delivery?
Pizza.
Pizza delivery, you know. So who else has a question? Actually, it's almost time, so we'll just take some questions now. Yeah.
Can one actually have expectations from others at all?
In a business relationship, expectations are necessary.
Right.
I'm not saying that expectations are bad, but the expectations in personal relationships shouldn't be so strong that they actually become demands. They just be that, you know, I sort of expect that you're going to do it. It can be something like a medium expectation rather than, I guess there's degrees. It's a good question you just raised. There's degrees, not so much that my expectation becomes a demand, but that normally under most circumstances I expect that you would do this. But if it's something you have, it turns into you have to. It's part of the contract, you know, it's part of the marriage contract or part of this deal or whatever. Then it becomes a demand. And it's a very unpleasant type of relationship to be into. Yeah.
My experience is one cannot expect anything from anybody else than oneself.
That's right. Like Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, he said, I have four disciples, two arms and two legs. So that was his expectation. And even sometimes if we expect our arms and legs to cooperate, they don't always do that. You know, you can't guarantee that. So one has to be very flexible to live in this world. What's that?
Bruce Lee said, be like water.
Yeah, be like water. Yeah, that's actually very, very good. To be like water. And I had one friend a number of years ago who was a quadriplegic. Quadriplegic means he had no use of his arms or legs. And he opened up a business.
What?
Yes, he opened up a business because he wasn't dependent on the, you know, he had a strong need for autonomy. And he typed on the computer with a pencil in his teeth. And he would type like that, and he ran a place of delivery packages where we would accept packages for a place called UPS. I don't know if you heard of UPS or FedEx or things
sure,
like
sure,
that.
Sure.
And I was amazed, you know, I was thinking that so many of us, we say, you know, I can't do this because of this, this, and that. And here was someone, you know, that he had a strong need for autonomy, and he was happy. So like we have to become like water, flexible, thinking outside the box. And certainly he was doing that. And he was happy. So sometimes we can't depend on our two arms and our two legs either. Not even have expectations about that. Interesting. Interesting. I mean, that's real determination. And Krishna, our performance of Krishna consciousness should be like that too. That we're going to do it. We're going to chant our rounds. We're going to be successful regardless of haitu kiya pratyata yatma supersedate. No impediments. All right. One more question before we end. Before I start sneezing again. Questions? Comments?
Maybe one question?
Yeah.
Again? Not long ago, there was appearance day of Ganga Mata Goswamini.
Yeah.
And I remember when I heard, when her, Maritas Pandit was her guru.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, you are a queen, go back home, it will be too difficult for you.
Yeah.
But she didn't follow the instruction of her guru.
Yeah.
And she went to Vrindavan and lived very austere.
Yeah.
So she felt like it was a test, but then he was very satisfied with her.
Right.
So now this, you know, when somebody or guru or, I mean, now it's in ISKCON we have a spiritual master says something, where is this line, you know? Oh, he's just testing me, or he's saying to me I should do this.
That's an interesting question. I'll tell you a story about that. Once upon a time, Prabhupada was approached by a disciple who wanted to take sannyas. Some of you heard this story before. And he said, Prabhupada, I really want to take sannyas. And Prabhupada said, I think you should get married. The Prabhupada was testing him. So the next day or a few days later, he brings his fiancée to meet Prabhupada. Prabhupada, I want your blessings for my marriage. So Prabhupada was testing. Actually, Prabhupada one time said the only time you can refuse the order of the spiritual master is when he orders you to get married. Usually the guru won't do that. But anyway, so that story of Ganga Mata Goswamini is a very sweet story, because her guru said that you're a queen, you'll never be accustomed to austerities. And she was so determined, and he was testing her. And she remained in Vrindavan. And the guru actually arranged for her protection, because he had another disciple, an older lady. And she lived with this older lady under her protection in Vrindavan. And later on, she went to Jagannath Puri. That's why she became known as Ganga Mata, because by her austerities, the Ganges actually came to Jagannath Puri, and they carried her into the temple of Lord Jagannath. Some of you may remember this story. And then she was arrested because they thought that she was going to steal something from Lord Jagannath. And then the king had a dream, and in that dream, Lord Jagannath told him, she's actually a great devotee, you should take initiation from her. And the king of Puri took initiation from her. Never heard that story before? That's Ganga Mata Goswamini. And her temple is right next to the Bhajan Kuti of Raghunath Das Goswami and Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, right on the banks of the Shamakund, in the place called the Manasa Pavana Ghat. So she's a great devotee. So yes, the guru will sometimes test the disciple. And the disciple has a right exercising etiquette to disagree with the guru and have some discussion. Ultimately, the disciple will follow the guru. I gave that example the other day that Tamal Krishnamars was asked by Prabhupada to go to China, and he said, I'm not going to China. And Prabhupada loved Tamal Krishnamars, and Prabhupada said, if you don't go to China, I'm taking away all your service, all you can do is sit down in Mayapur and chant the holy names. And then Tamal Krishnamars said, okay, I'll go to China. So it's not exactly a stereotyped relationship between the guru and disciple, it's a back and forth relationship. So in that particular case, the guru was testing the disciple. I don't usually do stuff like that. Testing disciples. I think you should marry Adi Purush. Okay! You failed the test. Adi Purus, it's interesting. He said, I just want to remain, this is true, I want to remain brahmachari, so I should get married. And I said, well, I think you should be married. Okay, Guru Maharaj. You got to find me someone. This is true, actually.
Internally it was a bit different, but I think I was trying to be polite.
Yeah. He thought to please me, he should portray himself as someone who wanted to remain single for the rest of his life, right? Something like that.
I can't remember so much. I think some of the brahmacharis or brahmacharinis sort of preached to me to be brahmachari also.
Yeah, they're like Tulsi.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have this thing. They preached him, so he wanted to meet their expectations of him.
He had some good arguments too.
They had good arguments. Don't tell us.
I mean, at the time, I mean, I wouldn't say they're good now. But.
Oh, good. Okay, it's a relief. So you know. So anyway, so he was like a test, so to speak. He said, "Yeah, I want to remain brahmachari." And I said, not a good idea for you. You should get married. He said, okay. Find me someone. And I said, there's this nice girl in Slovenia. And she's educated. I said, oh, really? What's her email address? What's her... So he was like overly enthusiastic. And happy. And then he was on WhatsApp 24 hours a day. Sometimes I'm amazed, sometimes when you have people start to associate with each other, how they can be texting all day long and talking all day long. I wonder, what can people say? Hi, I love you. I love you. Okay. Yeah, what else can you say, you know? I like pizza. Yeah, I like pizza too. But somehow they managed to be communicating for like 10 hours a day. It's just like, it's unbelievable, isn't it? This is an observation. Okay, on that happy note, we should end. Today and we'll see everybody. Later I have a bunch of meetings that are arranged by Prema today, right?
First is now.
What's that?
First is now.
Now, first meeting now.
Yeah.
No rest for the wicked. So hopefully we can get to rest at a decent hour tonight so we can take a walk tomorrow.
Yes. Mm-hmm.